always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Sunday evening by you guys. It is a post-conference finals mailbag session that we are going to be undertaking. We'll talk a little bit about those conference finals and this finals matchup that we have lined up. I have a couple of lessons that I'm kind of taking from this this playoff, you know, whether it be the conference finals or these playoffs in general. So we'll go through some of those, and then I'm going to try to leave as much time as I possibly can for your guys' questions and comments. Didn't get anything from the iTunes mailbag, which means that, one, you guys dropped the ball. A reminder, please. Hit that, please. If you guys are want a topic covered here on the show, the best way to ensure that your topic is covered is by leaving it in the form of a 5-star iTunes review. And then, you know, I will get to those. Obviously, that's at the start of every mailbag episode. But yeah, also it means that, you know, not getting iTunes questions today means that I have that much more time for your guys' questions that have already come from Twitter and are hopefully going to come in the chat over the course of the show. So leave those questions there and I will get to absolutely as many of those as I possibly can. I can't say there was that one listener a little while back who got really angry at me for saying that I was going to get to every single comment from here till kingdom come, or at least took that from how I phrased it. So I have to be very careful about how I promise what questions I'll answer. But yeah, pop on in, ask those questions. It doesn't even have to be about basketball either, by the way. Like, I just, I'm almost done with the Spider-Noir series. I just set up a golf hitting bay and I'm trying to figure out the last couple kinks in that one. We have we are right around the corner from another season of Game of Thrones. Fire away with anything else that you guys want to talk about as well. And we will go ahead and dive on in, starting with a few questions from Twitter. A quick reminder also, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the show and then also turn on notifications for YouTube so that you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever you get yours, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere you get them is perfectly fine with me. All right. So I'm just going to go in the order that they are listed here. We have 7 questions so far from Twitter, starting with at Bashir4190. It's just Bashir. I think I see you from time to time in the chat too. So Bashir asks, do you think the Lakers are open to move more high risk? Or do you think the Lakers are open to more high risk, high reward moves now? Teams have won championships off betting luck. Jonathan Isaac might get waived. Robert Williams has always been a gamble, but when healthy, those guys can easily boost your odds with not much cap room taken. I think that eventually we're going to start seeing the Lakers take a few more swings like you're talking about, whether they be, you know, high injury risk type players, right? Rob Pelinka talked at the at his, like, you know, postseason presser with JJ Redick about how moving the South Bay Lakers to Coachella and freeing up their practice space actually opens up room for more medical personnel there, and in a specified, you know, training area for recovery and stuff like that. And when we've seen the extent to which the Dodgers have injected so many resources and invested so many resources into creating margin for error when they do take those gambles. And I think we're going to see the same thing here with the Lakers as the organization kind of fills out. So I don't know that I would necessarily see it happening to that extent this year. I think they're still going to be somewhat risk averse. It's also a front office that is made up of extremely risk averse people. I think you would see more of like the Dodgers type moves from the people that Mark Walter hire after Rob Pelinka is gone. Like we're kind of seeing it with filling out the rest of the front office where there are, it's not even whispers at this point, but there's like rumblings and there's a lot of people talking about this around the league, how, you know, as the Lakers have tried to fill out their front office, they've gone about it in a lot of the same ways that have created issues in the past. Low balling candidates is kind of the most frustrating thing that I've kind of heard about. And that would kind of explain why they wound up getting, you know, no offense to Rohan, who they hired from the Pelicans, but you know, it wasn't exactly a, you know, holy shit, they got so-and-so from OKC. Holy crap, they got who from where? It was New Orleans? Are you sure? Now, he might surprise. He might be really, really good. There, you know, he does have a solid reputation from around the league and stuff like that. But it's not like an, oh, my God, what? They were able to get who? In the same way that it was when Mark Walter hired Andrew Friedman and he hired Farhan Zaidi. I had the listener the other day say that apparently I've been saying Zaidi the wrong way. I've only ever heard it that way, but I don't think I've ever heard it from anybody who doesn't cover the Dodgers. The noise that I've kind of heard about, you know, the way that the Lakers have gone about filling out their front office and specifically those two assistant GM gigs hasn't exactly engendered a whole bunch of belief in this process. And I would probably, you know, until Mark Walter's people are there, I don't think we'll ever see, like, while Rob Pelinka and while Jeannie Buss and while the Rambai are there, I don't think we'll ever see the Lakers operate the way that we would kind of like to see them operate. And I'm not saying that the Dodgers are perfect, by the way. I just think that, you know, when you're the Lakers and you have endless resources here and we're still getting word that you're lowballing candidates, that's where I'm like, all right, that's the rot that needs to be extricated from this organization still taking hold and influencing in a negative way the efforts to modernize the Lakers. So hopefully those rumblings and those narratives kind of subside and we start to hear more about the Lakers doing more to get the right people, the best people in their organization. But you know, until we see that or hear that, I think that they're probably going to remain kind of risk averse. But all this said, you know, Robert Williams, Jonathan Isaac, Williams especially, I do believe that the Lakers will probably kick the tires on Williams. They have liked him for years. They had multiple trade conversations with Portland about Robert Williams over the last couple of years. And I don't think now that he would be a free agent coming off of his first kind of healthy season in a while that the Lakers would now all of a sudden not show interest in him. But for like the Jonathan Isaacs of the world where, it's been year after year after year, and even this season, he was never particularly healthy. I do think the Lakers are going to be kind of risk averse there. I forgot to talk about that shocking Spurs win over the Thunder in OKC, and watched it last night with my neighbors. I was actually kind of, I think it helps that it's a Texas team in that thing, but was actually really kind of pleasantly surprised to have a neighbor shoot a group text out to me and some of the guys from around this neighborhood saying like, hey, anybody want to do anything for the Spurs game tonight? And I was like, Tottenham? Like, I was actually really surprised that the NBA is in this place here where my neighbors are kind of talking about them. I think there's a lot of Chet stuff going on there, a couple Spurs fans in my neighborhood, so I think that really helps. But pleasantly surprised all the same. As we went over there, watched that game, and I kind of walked away from the Spurs beating the Thunder the way that they did. One, just incredibly impressed. Like, that team, the unwavering belief in themselves over the course of that game was incredible. The Thunder would throw their counter punches and they would go on runs and they would take the lead, and that crowd would be going insane, and the Spurs would just kind of, all right, I guess we got to hit another big shot here. And they would hit another big shot, and they would extend the lead back out. And finally, you know, Luke Kornet has that chase down block on Isaiah Hartenstein, and I thought thoroughly deflated the energy in that building. And I don't think OKC ever really recovered again. So just so incredibly impressed by San Antonio. And you know, my couple of takeaways here is one, again, the Lakers have to get athletic and physical enough to compete against those two teams. Those teams are really effing good, man. And they're really, you know, they're obviously really young. They obviously all have a ton of, like, you know, crazy energy, whether it be potential or kinetic. Like, they're just constantly in movement and motion. They had timely shooting from guys who could also defend on the other end. That is something that the Lakers just haven't had enough of, right? They've basically always had one or the other, where it's like a really good offensive player, but somebody who struggles on the defensive side. Or you'll have like a really good defensive player who just wrecks the offense on the other side. You look at like the Spurs and the Thunder and the number of two-way wings that both of those teams had, or two-way presences that both of those teams had. And, you know, the Lakers have a lot of catching up to do in that specific regard. The other thing that I took away from this, though, is even while I talk about physicality and even while I talk about, the things that the Lakers need to improve on, I did walk away from this postseason really kind of excited about Luka next year. For one thing, you know, I Luka's ability to shoot, especially, you know, the way that he shot later in the year, if he's able to shoot, you know, above average and at the crazy volume that he shoots it, that really mitigates against Chet's impact on the Lakers or the Lakers offense. I thought one thing that really stood out over the course of the series, Mark Daigneault actually talked about Chet's three-point volume and how it really dissipated over the course of that series. But I actually thought Shea's lack of three-point shooting really hurt. I think I saw Darius point this out on Twitter too. But Shea had obviously statistically a really good series and stuff like that, and he's still an excellent player. But I thought his inability or disinterest in shooting threes really allowed Wemby to completely impact OKC's offense. And I mean, honestly, I I thought it was a series defining play, but you know, Shea gets around his defender, has an angle kind of to the rim, and you know, then sees Wemby coming and throws some wild pass that, you know, obviously wasn't a turnover, but didn't gain an advantage, actually took away an advantage because Shea had one at his time of making the pass. And yeah, like statistically, Shea was really good in that series, but I thought that the Spurs, you know, defense was able to bother him to such an extent that I think that the Lakers, if they can bring in, obviously you're not going to just find Champagne off of the your local Y. You're not going to find, you know, some of the guys who gave Shea, you know, Stephon Castle, I thought was just incredible that series. You're not going to find one of those just like off the scrap heap. But if the Lakers can get some length and they can turn Shea Gilgeous-Alexander into a somewhat unwilling jump shooter, you know, from deep, especially, like I thought one thing the Spurs did really, really well was they kind of gave Shea space out at the 3-point line and then got really like more increasingly aggressive the closer that Shea got to the mid-range. And even on the mid-range jumpers that Shea did take, he was having to like put extra arc on the ball. He was shooting him with defenders in his bubble. Now it did lead to some extra free throws here and there, but I thought that the Spurs over the course of the series really kind of picked up on some tells and stuff like that from Shea's game, and what he kind of does in preparation for shooting a mid-range jumper. And I thought they did a fantastic job of making him uncomfortable whenever he did those things. So like, you know, I think, you know, it's this twofold thing where Wemby is just this awe-inspiring talent on both sides of the ball. I honestly don't even know what you do with Wemby offensively. You just kind of hope he's in one of those moods where he's kind of floating a little bit, and then don't like poke the bear. But like defensively, Wemby is just such a destroyer of worlds that you have some of the best athletes on planet Earth driving to the basket and going, maybe I got to kick this one out, rather than, you know, really kind of challenging him. And, you know, if now I do think that the Lakers need to get guys who can still challenge Wemby. And I thought that Minnesota's approach of just, Wemby might get 10 or 12 blocks in a game, but we're just going to continue to attack him with reckless abandon. I think you need some of that. But if you combine some of that with Luka's 3-point shooting from, you know, over the top of Wemby, I think that gives the Lakers an advantage that even OKC didn't have going into that series. So I don't think that there is this unclosable gap between the Lakers and OKC and San Antonio. It's a lot of work and the Lakers got to get a lot right. But I think at the end of the day here, there is, I think, a pathway to entering next season in that tier. It means it's a very narrow pathway, but there's one there all the same. And I think the Lakers have to navigate that pathway.